Welcome to the Senate Education and Workforce Development Committee. Three public hearings today that we're going to have to juggle and make accommodate some state reps who are sponsoring and involved in all three of these. And what I might do is start off with a joint public hearing on House Bill 2283 and 2285. Why don't you start us off with a summary of each?
Certainly. House Bill 2283 specifies the length of time during which a student is allowed to satisfy requirements for modified diploma, extended diploma, or alternative certificate, and allows a reduction in time if consent is provided. It specifies the number of instructional hours, transition hours, hours of other services that a student must be able to access. It authorizes students' individualized education program, which is often referred to as the IEP, their team, to decide that the student will not access total number of hours, declares an emergency effective July 1st, 2011. House Bill 2285 identifies the person who may provide consent for the purpose of awarding high school diplomas, modified diplomas, and extended diplomas, and for the purpose of advancing students to the next grade level. There has been an amendment to House Bill 2285. The First Amendment was resolving conflicts between the two bills, basically saying that if House Bill 2283 becomes law, then Section 1 of House Bill 2285 is repealed. It has been combined with a dash 2 that clarifies a parent's consent being required if a student has been determined not to have the ability to give informed consent regarding the student's education pursuant to a protective proceeding under Chapter 25.
Okay, thank you. These bills came from the House and were pre-session filed by the House Interim Committee on Education. Representative Gelser is standing by to come and testify. Before she gets here, I have David Williams, Corrine Thomas-Kirstein signed up. And we also have the department here. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, David Williams with Portland Public Schools, here to express opposition to House Bill 2283, specifically with concerns over the requirements around the length of the day and the amount of time required to be provided to students, specifically in the 18 to 21-year-old window, students who work with our transition program. Rather than bumbling through technical issues of my own, I brought with me today Ms. Thomas-Kirstein from the school district. She is the director of our community transitions program and will be walking through what we do and why this is of concern to us. And we'll be happy to answer any questions after that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Corrine Thomas-Kirstein. I've worked for Portland Public Schools for 29 years in a variety of occupations. I'm currently the administrator of transition services for 1821 and oversee high school transition services as well. So I'm here today to talk about our 18 to 21-year-old program, the Community Transition Program. We have adopted an adult education model to meet the needs of these young adults. And that reflects that no adult goes to school for 35 hours a week. No adult attends classes 35 hours a week. Our program is a match to what students will experience as a transition to adult services and adult life. Some of our students attend 12 to 15 hours, some less, maybe even an hour to check in with their job coach, to refine their resume for job coaching. Some students attend more. It is all related to the educational requirements of their individual IEP. Like adults, they take specific classes and courses that are practical and key for the things that they are motivated to learn that are important for their success. We began to adopt this model 4 years ago. ODE has assured us that we are compliant with the law and the spirit of the law. I am proud of our program. We have moved from a service that looked more like a drop-in program with little focus on specific learning goals to a program that's very focused in instruction and with results. We now partner with over 50 agencies in the metro area, and we connect our adults with our young adults with community and adult agencies, which will be their future. We have 53 students that are aging out of our program this year, and all of them are connected to one or more of the type of agencies like vocational rehabilitation, medical and mental health services they'll need as adults, alternative to employment, college, trade schools, work, and volunteer community work. Our collaboration with our partners is vital. The students' ability to connect with the partners is vital. It's their future, and this is what transition is, our shared services during this important time in that young adult's life. So that when we go away after 12, 13, 14, 15 years of school services, they can't take us with them. They need to know how to live a life and spend their time in a healthy way, be as independent as possible, know how to access the resources in the community for their success. We invest a lot in the collaboration with our partners for that reason. This last year, we entered a working group with all the brokerages in Multnomah County to develop shared working agreements, and with those shared working agreements and our partnership, our capacity to prepare the student for adulthood has increased. I want to point out that we already have a mechanism to identify the relevant educational services for students who are served under IDEA. The IEP is developed with the students' educational needs addressed for all areas of transition, and those are community participation, education about recreation and leisure, post-secondary education, vocation, and independent living. The IEP is carefully created, and it's connected with assessment, and is connected with, it has to tie into the student's life goals. It's crafted by a team that includes the student, family, educators, and advocates. And as a school program, we're responsible to provide quality education that will meet the needs of that student so that student makes progress. The progress has to be monitored at least quarterly or more. If the student doesn't make adequate progress, we meet and we figure out what we need to change. One of those options is increasing the amount of service that the student needs in order to make progress. Families and advocates know that the IEP is dynamic. They know that they can call an IEP review at any time. We can look at progress. This last school year, we have 170 students, and there was one student that the IEP team met. The student's not making adequate progress. The student needs more service time, and that was added to the IEP. That was one out of 170 students. This adult service model is working for our students, and they are making progress. The IEP addresses education. It's comprehensive in terms of the transition needs. If it were legislated that there were additional services that the school needs to provide for 18 to 21, that time and that funding would be beyond educational needs. I do not think the school districts need to be in the business of providing non-educational services. I do not think we need to spend funding and time on respite and purely recreational services for 18 to 21-year-olds. And of course, this is especially true in this economic time. The climate we have now with the funding crisis. This bill does not have any additional funds. There's just so much money in the pie, as you know, and the services, the funding would need to come out of some other aspect of the transition program. In our district, that would mean the high school transition services, and this would be a great loss for high school students who are working to their diploma. Transition needs to start early to be most effective, and I do not want to see the loss of those services at the high school level. So in closing, Oregon does not need a law to mandate that the school provide non-educational services for transition age young adults. The student's IEP already defines the educational services which are required, appropriate, and meaningful. So thank you, and I want to thank all of you for your work for the students and people in Oregon.
Okay, appreciate your testimony. Questions, Senator Morse?
Could you point out in the bill the language that is objectionable. If you, maybe, David, if you could do that.
Sure. Mr. Chair, Senator Morris, specifically we're looking at subsection 12. I believe it's page 3. I apologize. Don't have the bill right in front of me, where we are identifying the requirement that districts provide either the equivalent of a full-day, full-time high school level service to all children in transition services, or there is sort of other steps to get out of that. The piece I will add to this. Oh, thank you. The bit I will add. Yeah. So it's page 3 of the bill. Really the bulk of section 12. So line 32 and below is really what we're looking at. What the obvious direction here is the move to that full time full day program for transition students. If Portland Public Schools were to move all of our kids, and obviously this moves in that direction, it's a debate about how far it goes, but if we were to move all of our kids in transition services to full-time, full day, it would cost the district in excess of $1.2 million a year, or $2.4 million over a biennium. So it's not an insignificant impact on the district.
Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I know Representative Gelser is here, and maybe she'll be talking about the intent, but have you had discussions about what the intent is? Because it doesn't say that it has to be provided. It says they have to have access to a total number of instructional hours, or, and then there's the or, and then it even says somewhere else that the team may decide that they don't need the total number of instructional hours. And I know you said, but if they all took advantage of that, that would be that cost. But I'm just trying to figure out what the intent is. Is it just trying to be flexible to reach the needs of a few, or do we have to assume that everyone in the group is going to be taking advantage of the entire amount of time?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonamici, I think certainly I will leave it to the proponents to describe the intent behind the language. The original bill, unamended, of course, required the full-time, full-day program. We think that students do currently have access to full-time, full-day program. Should that be the determination of the IEP team as the best appropriate education services for the student, as Ms. Thomas-Kirsting outlined in her testimony?
Mr. Chair, if I could just do a follow-up. It seems like what you said is not inconsistent with an interpretation of this. It just might be an interpretation issue.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonamici, I think what the bill does is creates a default at the full-time, full-day program rather than defaulting to the IEP team, and requires sort of backing down from that default of a full-time, full-day program with additional consent provisions that run counter to the overall process of the IEP development.
Well, thank you. Well, we do have the co-chair of the Education Committee from the House here to help us along.
Thank you.
Thank you both. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Ms. Gelser.
Thank you.
We have a public hearing open on 2283 and on 2285.
Wonderful. Thank you, Pish. Chair Haas, members of the committee, thank you very much for inviting me here today. Let me briefly speak to House Bill 2285. It is a simple bill that clarifies who it is that provides consent when obtaining a modified or extended diploma. You will remember, Senator Haas in particular, because you've been part of the committee each session that we have worked on this, we wanted to make sure we weren't creating an easy out from standard diploma requirements. We wanted to involve parents and families. This simply clarifies that when you are looking at a student primarily receiving an extended diploma that experiences an intellectual disability and has an adult guardian for them, that person would be the person that signs that consent rather than the adult with the intellectual disability, unless that adult with an intellectual disability retains the ability to make their own decisions. The Dash 2 amendments that you have before that will clarify that issue, and I think this bill is non-controversial, good to go, and will clear up some questions in the field. In terms of House Bill 2285, I'm glad that I walked in. I'm disappointed that I was not made aware that Portland Public Schools would be 2283, yes, I'm sorry, would be testifying in opposition to the bill. Had to pick up a copy of the testimony in opposition to it. The intent of this bill, Senator Bonamici, really hit quite correctly. It is simply to ensure that every student has access to a full day of services if that is what is appropriate for that student as determined by the IEP team. If you look on page 3 and section 12, it clearly starts out that you would have access to a total number of instructional hours, and then it moves on to stating that the IEP team can certainly choose that they would provide fewer hours than that. You simply need to explain why. The reason that this is necessary is across the state, we do have students who are not being allowed access to a full day of transition services, even though that is something that is offered and available to them under federal law. Families go to these IEP meetings, and they are simply told, this is the way that we do transition services in this district. You need to fit into this cookie-cutter mold. This simply allows, it creates a safeguard for that IEP team to make clear the assumption that a full school day would be available to these students. After all, the school districts, if the student is attending full day, is being reimbursed for that full day of services. This bill also was amended on the House side in order to address some of the concerns that were originally raised by Portland Public Schools, particularly the collaborative arrangement that they described in terms of working with other agencies. You will look on the last page, beginning in line 11. It talks about how the IEP team may look at how they might be collaborating with other community resources. This is a fantastic thing, which should be happening. We want to clarify that we are not having an impact on the human services budget by requiring human services agencies to provide programs that are required under federal law to be offered by education programs, so we clarify that they do not need to change their eligibility criteria. It is important to note that there is guidance that has recently come out from the Department of Education that does, in fact, clarify that because school districts needed to be reminded that if you have a student in a work experience program that is being funded by an outside entity, it is not appropriate for the school district to claim reimbursement for that time. That is a problem that we are having across the state. That is one of the problems that this bill is intended to address. Finally, as to the intent of this bill, transition services for 18 to 21-year-olds are critical. These are the services that enable students and support students to become more independent in adult life, to become prepared for work, to be prepared to live independently, and in some cases to have the additional time necessary to complete either a standard high school diploma, a modified diploma, or an extended diploma. This creates nothing new. It is a clarification, and I hope that you will consider the needs of these students and the challenges that families face when they go to IEP meetings where they are forced into a cookie-cutter mold. And finally, I would again express my disappointment in terms of not having access to this before coming in here. And it's unfortunate that I have yet to have seen Portland Public Schools support any proactive proposal to increase achievement for students with disabilities in the state of Oregon. It is worth noting that our statewide graduation rate for students with disabilities is 42%. We should be doing everything we can to improve achievement for these kids. This is one of the things that will do so. I hope that you will work it today and send it to the floor. It passed easily in the House.
Thank you, Representative. Could you just put a face on this? Tell us, give us a hypothetical or a composite student. Under what circumstances, what does a transition program look like for a student who has not graduated, who is between 18 and 21?
I will give you a couple of composites because it could be a variety of different students. The most traditional transition student, you might picture a student with Down syndrome, and part of their transition day might be continuing to work on literacy and functional math skills. They may be working on orientation and transportation, getting around the community. They might be in a work site or job training program. Another student in a transition program might be a student that has turned 18, has finished 4 years of high school, and is a couple of credits shy of earning their standard diploma or their extended diploma. So their transition program or 18 to 21 services might involve just continuing to attend classes at the high school so that they can achieve that standard or modified diploma. Some students under this bill may receive only a couple of hours of services from their school district and may spend the rest of their day in other services that are provided through vocational rehabilitation services or developmental disabilities disability services. This bill preserves that full spectrum of options. It just ensures that families are aware of all of the options that are on the table for them and that school districts are at the table to provide what they are required to under the federal law.
Questions?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Gelser, obviously there's a concern about paragraph 12 or section 12, and I wonder if you could talk about, I don't know how many students are at issue here, but it seems to me it would be helpful if we knew that, for example, it was one out of every 10 or one out of every 100 who really needed the full number of instructional hours. I just don't have a handle on how many that's going to be of the total population of students we're talking about.
Chair Haas, Senator Bonamici, I don't have a full number for you. I could get that for you. It probably varies by school district, but you have to think as well, individual families and kids are going to make different choices about what it is that works for them. Many students are not interested in continuing to come to school after they are 18. You are looking at the students that have the highest need for this ongoing sense of support services. I would point out again that this does not require that a full day be offered. It simply clarifies that families are aware that that is a consideration that is available to the IEP team to work on. The final thing that is important to note in the testimony of the opponents of the bill, they talked about increased costs to Portland Public Schools. School districts continue to be reimbursed for these students. This is really about ensuring that if a school district is claiming full-time FTE for a student, that they are providing full-time services for the student. If it costs more to provide full-time services to the student, and they are already claiming full-time FTE for the student, while providing part-time services, that is a significant problem. If the school district is providing part-time services and only claiming part-time FTE, this should not be a significant problem.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Representative. Any other questions? Senator Morse?
Thank you. Representative Gelser, if I'm concerned about language that says other services, could you let me point out the line, section 12, line 37. What might those be?
So you're looking on, for purposes of paragraph A of the subsection, transition services and other services designed to meet the unique needs of the students may be provided to the student through an interagency agreement entered into by the school district.
On page 3.
On page 3. I'm sorry. Which line are you on page 3?
Section 12 states that a student who has a modified diploma shall have the option and have access to a total number of instructional hours, hours of transition services, and hours of other services designed to meet the unique needs of the student, that is then the greater of. What would those other services be?
Thank you, Chair Haas, Senator Morse. That language was again added to the bill in response to the concerns that Portland Public Schools raised on the other side of the building to reflect that a full school day might be built in a collaborative way that involves the services that come from other programs. So as an IEP team is sitting and looking at building the day, part of that day might be educational services that are offered by the school district. The other services might be services that are provided by a developmental disabilities program, a vocational rehabilitation services program. All of that would be considered by this transition team and IEP meeting where all of these partners are supposed to also be attending to coordinate the services.
As a follow-up, and where I'm going with this is I'm concerned if we're building a case for litigation. If you have a parent that doesn't agree with the transition team that decides that we don't need to do these hours and some other program, And I'd like to have somebody that understands that maybe look at it from the perspective of a parent that doesn't agree, and you wind up in litigation because of the nature of this language.
Chair Haas, Senator Morse, there's two answers to that question. The first, in terms of the other services that might be provided by an outside agency, that is addressed in the next section of the bill on page 4. towards the end of that, it talks about an agency is not required to change any eligibility criteria or enrollment standards prior to entering into an interagency agreement as provided. So that goes back to those other services. Someone won't be automatically eligible for those. Already under federal law, if a parent or any member of the IEP team disagrees with a decision that has been made by the IEP team, you can go through your procedural safeguards and file a complaint with the Department of Education or a due process proceeding or go to mediation. So that is currently present in any IEP conversation that you might have. But this in no way creates an entitlement to other services. We were very careful to clarify that there would be no change in those enrollment discussions, and that's one of the reasons some of the people on the Human Services Committee have talked about this as a human services savings program, because it also ensures that we are not allowing education to push education responsibilities into the Department of Human Services for students age 18 to 21.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2283 and open up a public hearing on House Bill 3106. Representative Cannon is here. I believe this is the bottle bill, is it not? No. If you could give us a quick summary of what that is.
Certainly. The bag bill.
Bags.
Bags. You hear bags? As a quick summary, House Bill 3106 requires school districts to give priority for participation in the Expanded Options Program to eligible at-risk students if the school district has met the cap, credit hour cap, or if the credit hour cap has not been exceeded. It modifies the waiver for participation in Expanded Option Program to ensure participation by eligible at-risk students. It directs at-risk students who participate in the accelerated college credit programs that they are not required to make payments for participation. And it changes, for the purposes of the waiver, the requirement that school districts offer dual credit technical preparation program to requirement that the school district offers accelerated college credit program, eliminates the requirement that duration of length be the length of a program.
Thank you. And we will visit, go back to 3106. And we will go back to 2283 and 2285 after we're done with 3106. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ben Cannon. I'm a state representative from House District 46 in Portland. It's a great pleasure to be in this committee room, not simply because I get to testify in front of you, but because I get to study the beautiful tapestry on the wall behind you in Hearing Room B, one of my favorites. So House Bill 3106. So this relates to the Expanded Options Program, and I suspect you have an understanding already of what the Expanded Options Program is, but I'll remind you that this program goes back to 2005 when our colleague, then Senator Avell Gordley, promoted a new tool in the dual credit system available to high school students in Oregon. And her vision was of a system that meets the needs of all students, especially those at a disadvantage due to their background and their family's background. So her vision was one of a system that where we would look at education not in terms of silos, but as a fluid and flexible system that meets the needs of all children, especially those who may be disadvantaged by background. So what is Expanded Options? Well, it's a program that requires schools to notify juniors or seniors about their potential eligibility to take community college or college courses with the full cost of those courses picked up by the school district using their state school dollars and local school dollars. So this is full cost means full cost, tuition and fees, potentially transportation, books, materials, and other supplies. And it's distinguished from other dual credit programs like AP classes or IB classes. And I think that in addition to the fact that expanded options envision students taking college courses perhaps at that college site, and that's one important difference from APIB. I think it's important also to think about who AP and IB may best serve, who expanded options may best serve. AP and IB courses, great for students who know that they're college bound, and I think potentially great for others as well. But consider the impact that getting a taste of the college experience, an actual visit to a college, courses taught by a college teacher being surrounded by the college environment. Consider that the impact that experience might have on a student who has had no idea whether he or she is right for college. Maybe the first in his or her family to attend or consider attending college. So this bill attempts to make some improvements to expanded options, to bring it into line with that vision that Senator Gordley had. It focuses the program on at-risk students. That is a term that's defined elsewhere in statute. Secondly, it tightens the waiver requirement. There are many districts who participate in expanded options, and there are some who use the waiver option not to participate. We don't get rid of that waiver option, but we would like to ensure that for a district to opt out via the waiver, they have to offer substantially similar programs for substantially similar populations. This bill presents modest changes and improvements to expanded options, received robust support in the House with just one no vote on the floor. This is not, you know, a silver bullet in the in our, you know, reform arsenal, but I think it is a small but meaningful step that we can make to help our system of schools, both K-12 and community college higher ed, work best for our students.
Thank you. Questions? We're familiar with the dual credits issue and expanded options. We've passed at least one other bill on this, and it's come up a number of times. Take us up again next week. Thank you for coming by. And I think we'll move forward.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. If there's no one else to testify today on 3106 besides Dana, we'll just take Dana now then.
Hi, thanks so much. My name is Dana Hepper. I'm the Advocacy Director with Stand for Children, and we're supporting and been working closely with Representative Cannon on House Bill 3106. And he said most of what I was going to say. What I wanted to add was where the impetus for making the changes to this law came from. Last year, I was visiting the Centennial Learning Center in East Multnomah County, and we were sitting down there with some students and a college counselor at that school that had worked with expanded options in the past. And, you know, these students were talking about how this program had done exactly what Representative Cannon outlined, which is were kids that Centennial Learning Center serves kids who were not being served by Centennial High School. These were kids that were getting suspended, expelled, considering dropping out. Some of them were using drugs. Some of them were managing a teenage pregnancy, et cetera, et cetera. Centennial Learning Center was swooping in and helping these kids figure out the next step in their life and getting them successfully through high school and on into college, which was their real goal, and amazingly how they tracked their success. And they explained to us that they'd been using expanded options, and the two students that we met with had graduated from high school with a number of college credits under their belt, which meant two things to them. One, they knew they could be successful in college classes, which is something they didn't know before. One of the students said to us, you know, her dad asked her, "Why are you going to college? Just get a job." And so she came from that environment and was then, after experiencing expanded options, planning on going to college. And the other thing it did was it meant that they had less credits that they had to figure out how to pay for out of their family's limited budgets, because they already had credits under their belt they'd earned while they were in high school. So this sounded like a great program, and they said, but wait a minute, we did run this program, and then when in 2007, when the legislature passed an expanded waiver for school districts, Centennial School District was one of the over 30 school districts that started opting out of expanded options. And we don't have another opportunity for these students to earn college credit. So we've been seeking private grants to pay for students to continue to take college credit programs. What we'd really like is to go back to when Centennial School District participated in expanded options, and we could use those dollars to pay for our students to take college credits. And so we started digging into why so many districts were opting out, what the intent of the law was, and figuring out what we could do to make this law, make more districts want to opt in and set a higher bar for opting out to make sure that school districts that opted out were still meeting the needs of at-risk students and giving them opportunities to get dual credit. So that was the impetus for this law, and we are very happy to see it moving through this body and with the chair's willingness, I hope that next Tuesday, when I believe you'll be taking this bill up again, there will be a student and a college counselor teacher here to share their personal experiences, and then we look forward to seeing this bill move. Thanks so much.
Thank you, and we do appreciate the need to change the culture in the state, if you will, in some parts, some areas, to accept college as something that should be a not a dream, as the saying goes.
Absolutely.
Questions?
Thanks so much.
Thank you. There's no one else to testify here on 3106. We're going to close the public hearing on 3106. And I'm going to reopen a public hearing simultaneously on House Bill 2283 and House Bill 2285. I'd like to call up the Department of Education, if I could, to help us with this, these bills.
This is yours. Chair Haas, members of the committee, for the record, Autumn Wilburn, Department of Education. Thank you for having us in front of you today. We're really here at the committee's request to talk more about the modified diploma and the extended diploma, the differences, who qualifies for those, etc. And with me today, I have Jackie Burr, who is also with the Department of Education, and this is one of the many areas that she oversees, and she really is the expert on this issue. So with that, I'm going to turn it over.
Senator Haas, Chair Haas, Senators, my name is Jackie Burr. I am the Secondary Transition Specialist with the Office of Student Learning and Partnerships in the Department of Education. And we were requested to come and talk to you a little bit, explain to you what a modified diploma is and what a student who would be receiving a modified diploma would actually look like. A modified diploma is a document given by the school district to a student who has the inability to meet the full set of academic requirements of a regular diploma. So these are students that are not able to receive a regular diploma. There are eligibility requirements specific to the modified diploma. The eligibility requirements say that the student must have documentation in his file that he has an inability to maintain grade level achievement due to a significant learning or instructional barrier. That decision as to whether a student will get a modified diploma is made by a school team. For a student with disabilities, that would be an IEP team. For other students, it would be a school team. Students who are eligible for a modified diploma are regular students, students on a 504 plan, and students who are eligible for special education. Did you want to?
Can I ask what a 504 plan is, Mr. Chair?
Pardon me?
Could you just remind us what a 504 plan is?
A 504 plan is a student with a disability who does not qualify for special education. An example of that would be a student with a hearing impairment who has hearing aids, definitely has a disability, but does not require specially designed instruction. They would receive accommodations within the classroom, but they would not receive specially designed instruction under special education.
Could you walk us through how the financing works, how schools are paid for transition for kids 18 to 21, young adults?
Chair Haas, I have to tell you, I'm hearing impaired, and so could you repeat your question, please?
Well, I'm a little foggy on how the financing works. We're hearing a couple different stories. Is it part-time ADMW or full-time? How does that work? Give us a hypothetical, a student in, you know, Cleveland High School who's under this transition program or modified diploma. How does the Portland School District get repaid, and just how does that work?
Chair Haas, for students 18 to 21, their educational day is determined, this is for students with disabilities, their educational day is determined by the IEP team based on assessment. The length of the day is determined by the IEP. It depends on the configuration of the student, how many adults, teachers, support staff are involved with that student. So you could have a student on a one-on-one situation, being in instructional services for, say, 3 to 4 hours a day, and be considered a full-time student, counted under the average daily membership as a full-time student. And the district would be reimbursed full-time for that student. That same student sitting in a class with 20 other students, receiving services 3 to 4 hours a day only, would be considered a part-time student because the one-on-one, the ratio of the adult to the student is significantly different.
And the district still gets a full ADMW even if that student is there part-time?
The student gets a...
The school district gets a full weight payment?
Yes.
Even if the student is there part-time?
No. If Senator Haas, if the student is considered part-time, they would have to report that student as part-time to the Department of Education and would only receive reimbursement half-time.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, so I think the important nuance here is the number of staff that are assigned to that student and the student's IEP plan.
Yes.
That determines whether or not that student gets a full weight or only a half weight.
Okay. Well, I can see the legitimate arguments here. I do agree with the Representative Gelser in wanting to give these young people who have some troubles in all kinds of different ways, it sounds like, a good start in life in a way that might, you know, also save money even in human services budgets. I understand Portland's argument as well, saying we've got enough on our hands just trying to educate kids up to 18, and now you want us to do this too. What is your take on that? Are we really going that far, or is this a clarification?
Chair Haas, I work under the the IDEA, Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, which requires that all school districts and the Department of Education must provide services to students with disabilities until the age of 21 or until the time that they graduate with a regular diploma. Those services are considered a free appropriate public education. The federal government now is very much emphasizing that the ages of 18 to 21 are a transition period. They are encouraging states as well as districts to work together with their agencies, the Department of Human Services, the Vocational Rehabilitation, all the other agencies, to try to provide a very smooth and even transition from one one place in the student's life, the end of school, into the next place in their life. It is a very difficult time for students and their families. Moving from one agency to another is not an easy thing. All the different agencies have different eligibilities, have different funding sources, and so forth. So it's very difficult to move from one to the other. The Department of Education is working with the other agencies, DHS and the Oregon Vocational Rehabilitation Services, to try to provide technical assistance to each one of the school districts and the other agencies' staff with clear, precise ways to make that transition easier. I believe that IDEA, as well as Oregon statute and rule, are very clear that the school districts must provide a free, appropriate public education to that child. But every single one of those children have a different configuration of services. And it must be an individual decision of that IEP team.
Thank you. That's an excellent answer. Mm-hmm. I didn't really mean to put you on the hot seat, but I guess I did. So, questions, Senator Bonamici?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think you were here earlier when there was the testimony about the Section 12, and there seems to be that seems to me to be the issue. And so you've sort of clarified that the districts are required to provide the appropriate education until either 21 or they get it, some sort of diploma.
A regular diploma.
Regular diploma. Okay. Or yes. Okay, so 21 or to get a regular diploma. So my question, and I'm trying to clarify this, is this Section 12 that says that these students shall have access to a total number of instructional hours of transition services and hours of other services designed to meet the unique needs of the student that is the greater of, and then it's the total number of instructional hours that's required to be provided to students who are attending a public high school, or, and then there's the other provisions there. So I understand that each is on a case-by-case basis, but what I'm trying to get a sense of is how many of these students who are between the 18 and 21 time period, how many of them are going to be accessing a full number of hours as a traditional high school student would be?
Chair Hess, Senator Bonamici, the school districts in Oregon are required to provide 990 hours in grades 9 through 12.
Right.
To each student. That does not mean that each student will receive 990 hours. It means they must make available those hours. Students 18 to 21, there are no actual hours in statute or rule to say that these number of hours must be provided for the 18 to 21-year-old. Those students who remain in school from 18 to 21, I don't have the exact number in front of me, but these students are usually students who have cognitive disabilities, they could have physical disabilities, or they could have emotional disabilities. Most students getting a modified diploma, the majority of them, will finish school in 4 years, or at the very most, probably 5 years. The most severe of those kids, those students, will remain in school until they're 21. These students usually are not getting a lot of academic work at that time. They're getting life skills classes. They're getting independent living skills. And they are getting work with the vocational rehabilitation and with the brokerages under the Department of Human Services. So the numbers are not are not large that would remain in school until they are 18, or until they are 21. But those students that remain until they are 21 usually have significant needs. Again, I would say it would depend on the individual student. For example, you could have the same student with the same cognitive disabilities, and one of them would be able to have, say, 3 hours of life skill classes under the school district in the morning, then work with vocational rehabilitation to get a job in the afternoon, and then work with DHS under the brokerages to receive further services in independent living toward the end of that day. As you can see, the number of students that would be involved to that degree would not be a large number of students, and they would be severely, moderately to severely impaired.
I guess, Mr. Chair, if I could just request either, from, and especially from the Portland folks are still here, I just want to get a sense of whether this is this clarifying existing practices, as Representative Gelser explained, or is this a new requirement? And I still don't have a sense of that, so if folks could sort of track that down for the committee, unless everybody else understands it, I'm the only one who doesn't, because it seems to be a difference of opinion about how that section is interpreted. So I'd really like some more information about that. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Further questions of the Department of Ed? Okay, thank you, both of you. And
thank you.
There was on 85, there was the consent, a new amendment idea came up after speaking to the department. And while she's here, could
you want to testify
that
on 2285? I'm sorry.
On the consent.
Okay.
Yes, please.
Yes, okay. Chair Hass, the one concern that the Department of Education had is that the IDEA requires that every student with a disability, upon reaching the age of majority, all of the educational rights would transfer to the student. In Oregon, the age of majority under Chapter 125 of the ORSs is 18. So when a student with a disability in Oregon turns 18, all of the rights transfer to that student. The student, because IDEA is very prescriptive and there's a lot of paperwork involved with this, the student is then responsible for signing all the papers, giving permission, allowing certain services to happen, or revoking services as they choose. If the student is incapable of doing that, they can only then their guardian can make those decisions for them. But the student can only be deemed incapable by the courts. And the courts must say that the student is incapable of making these decisions and appoint a guardian for that student. If the courts choose that the student is determined that the student is not incapable, then the student can say to their parents or to another adult, I would like for you to act as the surrogate to me. Our concern with this one piece of on page 3, lines 21 of House Bill 2285-2, the parent or guardian of the student, for the purposes of receiving consent as provided by subsections 1B, 4, and 5 of this section, consent shall be provided by the parent or guardian of the student If the student is 18 or has been determined not to have the ability to give informed consent regarding the student's education pursuant to a protective proceeding under ORS Chapter 125. That Chapter 125 is the guardianship. There is a concern that that the guardianship statute, if this is not put in here, that either the parent or the school district or an advocacy group or anybody for that matter could deem the student incapable of making these decisions. And that would be in conflict with the guardianship laws, which say that only the courts can deem that the student is incapable. Does that make sense?
To some people. Yes. Okay, we're going to grapple with both of these bills for a while and do some homework.
Okay.
And maybe leaning on you for more help. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Anyone else today here on 2283 or 2285?
Mr. Chair, I'd request the broader section of the education community give us their insights with respect to these bills. I'm kind of curious that they're absent today. It seems, given the concerns raised by Portland Public Schools, what would be the issue for the balance of the educational community?
Okay. All right, thank you. I'm going to close public hearing on 2283 and 2285.
Chair, before you adjourn, you have a constituent here who's with her mother on Take Your Daughter to Work Day. I thought you might want to acknowledge Kaya Patton, who's back there in the back of the room.
I see Kaya and Pat. Thank you for being here. And I also see
there's another
Cindy
one.
And daughter
Claire.
Thank you for coming to the Capitol today. Hope you have a fun day. No other business before us. We are adjourned.